was going to ask in regards to not treating people like they're disabled, because I think that there may be like a kind of disconnect, or like a walking on eggshells with people who are do not experience disabilities versus people who do. And I think there's like a fear of offending, or a fear mm-hmm. of not seeing, but mm-hmm. also not wanting to make someone's disability a big deal. And so I mm-hmm. was going to ask, like, from your perspective, how do you not treat people like they're disabled while also honoring the fact that there are maybe differences that are necessary to see, or that are necessary to be, what's the word I'm trying to think of?
If you're looking at, you want to be respectful of the fact that, okay, I acknowledge that you might have something that is right. a little different. So like if I'm in a wheelchair, then, you know, okay, you know that I use a wheelchair for getting around.
Right.
With the hidden disabilities, mm-hmm. the complexity behind that is number one, chances are you're not going to know. And if you do start to sense that, then I think that you want to make sure that it's no different than if you realize I'm really tall and your table is really low, and you're realizing, oh, wow, you know what? I probably ought to raise that table so she's not bending over to put her cup down on that table. Yeah. So you're thinking more of just being respectful of the person. But to want to focus on or feel the need to acknowledge their disability, whatever it is, yeah. it's really kind of irrelevant. I think yeah. that if I'm going through something and I want to talk about it, or it's important to me, then I have the responsibility to let you know that. And I have my core group that I work with. And if I'm struggling with something from a hearing loss side, that I will talk with them. And I know that they're the good resources to go to. But in the general public, I don't need you to be focused on my disability. I want you to just, number one, just let me feel included. Let me feel yeah. normal. Let me feel a part of whatever's taking place. And to just make sure that if you use effective communication, again, it can work. So if the person is not ever maintaining eye contact with you, that might be an indication of anxiety or autism, a cognitive disability. That's okay. You just go ahead and remember that they're probably not going to maintain eye contact with you, but you can still have the conversation. Just go ahead and adapt. Now, the problem you have is you're not used to it. So all of a sudden you've got somebody's, so if I all of a sudden, I'm looking down right now while we're talking here, and I'm all of a sudden, now that's one thing, I might be taking notes, but if you can tell that like I'm doing this and I'm not, then you're not used to that.
Yeah.
So it's you that has to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like really hard for people to do.
But see, that's hard to do because you're yeah. just trying to, and, well, see, and that's where the breakdown in communication happens, because
yeah.
like you might just want to be able to detox and relax and have a good time.
Yeah.
Now you're in a situation where you can't really just naturally be yourself.
Yeah.
And so that raises a little bit of probably could be tension, could be a little stress, could be or discomfort. And so that's where the complexity comes in with someone that has a disability, because they sense that. They
yeah.
know that.
Yeah.
So that's where the mental anguish comes into play, because there's no way really around that. It's going to happen. And it's being able to. So that's why someone with a disability, their mental issues are fivefold what a hearing person might deal with. The mental issues just grow exponentially as a result of all of that.
Yeah, and it gets so overwhelming to have to deal with, like, how society mm-hmm. is, like, mm-hmm. seeing
either seeing you or shunning you,
how
because
you're
they don't know
like,
how to communicate.
And you feel really out of control because you're like, I can't live a normal life because it's not in my control. It's like people have, like, made these rules and set up this whole structure that makes me like that gives me a disadvantage or whatever because I don't have the same ableness.
But it's also just because of how it's measured. So yeah. It's like you just use the word normal and you just use the word, you know, so like
yeah.
falling in that normal parameter. And really on that bell curve, if you want to get into the scientific side yeah. of it, but on that bell curve, the normal range is minute, about 20%. Everybody else falls outside of that normal range.
Yeah.
And so the term normal.
What is it? I mean,
what does that mean?
I don't even know what that. Yeah.
What am I striving to be normal? I hope not. I mean, I really prefer not to be. It doesn't work in my vocabulary very well.
Yeah.
I mean, and people who know me know that too. It's like, I mean, normal, if they, people would say, would you describe Cynthia as normal? Well,
no.
But who wants
probably
to be?
Never.
Yeah.
I feel like it is. Yeah, I would be offended, I guess, if somebody described me as normal.
And you had said something earlier, too, about like how when you were growing up, like being someone who was hard of hearing or deaf was mm-hmm. seen as like, oh, well, you're not capable of intelligence. Mm-hmm. Like, or this, mm-hmm. and I mean, I guess there were a lot of things that were ignorant.
It still happens today.
It still happens, yeah. And that's why.
Oh, no, that it still happens.
So,
today.
But this like assumption that if you have a disability, specifically a hidden disability, that there's mm-hmm. no way that you can communicate, and so therefore there's no way that you can envision things that are smart or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, what was your? Have you had like experiences where people have like said things to you or treated you a certain way because you
absolutely
yeah
absolutely and I've had a lot of not good things happen
yeah
as a result of the hearing loss yes because mm. you're viewed as less than you're more inclined to run into unfortunately it's survival of the fittest in the world mm-hmm. so you can run into abuse, you can run into being attacked, you can run into a lot of variables that can come into play with having a disability. So one of the things that I love to talk about, especially with parents with children who have disabilities, is to, it's kind of like that movie Lion King,
oh, yeah.
Disney, mm-hmm. and it's survival of the fittest. And the one thing I wish that I had been taught, because there were so many things that I was given that were wonderful, that were fabulous, that if something did go wrong, I felt like I needed to cover it up and yeah. not address it because I'm supposed to be surviving. And I didn't know if that was a representation of weakness by not bringing it to the table.
Yeah.
So I'm fighting so hard to be normal
yeah.
and to be in that I felt like I might lose everything that I've worked toward by doing that. And that's actually extremely detrimental, obviously. Yeah. So that's one of the things that I really like to focus on with kids is you do have differences, but you also want to recognize the real world.
Yeah.
And the real world is survival of the fittest. So there are things that are not going to be okay. But it doesn't have to be the end of the world. And they need to have the resources to get out there and be able to do what they need to do. And look at the children today with post-COVID right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mental illness is, I mean, it's always been there and we saw it coming. I started introducing mental illness into workshops at least 15, 20 years ago because you could see the writing on the wall. You could see where it
yeah.
was headed. You could see the polarization that was starting with social media platforms and everything else. It became a number one focus for me. And probably also personally, I had a personal vetted interest for myself, for my children, for, you know, past, for my friends, for anybody else that's dealing with the same thing. So that mental ability to like feel connected, to be empowered, to be okay, to also realize that life is not about perfection and
yeah.
life is not about, you know, I chose the right field or I went after the right finances or I went after whatever it was that I'm supposed to. It's about being just out there and knowing that you're going to fall, knowing that things are going to go wrong and being able to move forward and finding that right environment mm-hmm. that helps you to do that.
Yeah.
The right resources where you have someone to talk to and,
yeah.
you know, move forward.
Yeah, that's the best, like, that's the best nurturing that you give somebody is like, how do you cope with the intense stuff that happens? Do you just hide it, run away, or can you like cope with it?
Right. Because, you know, it's like, because you get, especially if you have a disability, because it's like, you know, now today it's getting easier to talk about it. But now I think it's almost like going too far the other way. Mm. It's like, just go ahead and keep it in balance, because now we're coming up with so many different terms for all the different disabilities that to me it's overwhelming.
Is there... like, obviously there are words that we can't say that are offensive words, but how, like you're saying, we've gone too far with describing things. Like what? What do you think?
It can be anything, but it can be, I was trying to think of, because we just had a conversation the other day, and it was about, that person is entitled to get that award because they've done so much. And someone turned around and said, well, they're not entitled. And you don't use that word.
Wow.
And so I said, okay, well, why? Why would they not be entitled? So what word should I use? Well, they've earned that award, or they've, but not to use a specific word.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's like, I think that if someone starts shaping my, it's like trying to change my personality. There are different words that different people are going to use. That's part of their personality. That's part of how they like to communicate. That's part of how they describe things. So if someone is all of a sudden fine-tuning that and telling me that I need to be really, 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 really careful about all these different words, it's going to get to the point where, like, well, okay, so you know what? You speak for me.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Do you want to hear my words, or do you want to? And I do think, by the same token, there are different words like hearing impairment versus hearing loss.
Mm.
I happen to have a hearing loss. That is, a hearing impairment implies that I should be able to fix it.
Mm.
So there are words where it can be, where I think it maybe is. We've transcended to better words that are maybe like making it sound like it's just, it happens to be a part of who I am versus something is wrong with me.
Do you think that social media is further like misinterpreting these?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Social
like
media is, I think social media is conditioning people to where they're all of a sudden, everybody wants to speak in the same way. And to me, that is the biggest disability ever.
Mm.
Because to lose the ability to communicate is the biggest disability of all.
Yeah. Is it? So do you go from, can we just clear up one thing? I have had somebody that wanted me to ask this question, and I'm also curious. Is handicap an offensive term? What does that mean, handicap?
Yeah, so handicap, that's a really good question, you know. Well, it's a hand and a cap.
Yeah. And what is the meaning of that?
But handicap is actually really the where it's actually still used a lot right now is you'll find the handicap parking.
Yeah.
And that is for a physical disability. That is for someone that is needing to, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's something you can see either, because you can have MS, you can have a lot of different disabilities that they might have to park as close as they can to the building or wherever they're going to, because you won't see it. They're able to get out of the car, they're walking on their own 2 feet, but they might need to have the shortest window from point A to point B, because they don't know when they're, or if they're going to collapse or have a problem. The wheelchair is also a part of that, and the handicap parking, that's why it has the extra lines that go off to the side so that they can get out, not only get out, but have room to turn the wheelchair around and get where they need to go. So the primary definition of the handicap was for the physical disability and being able to have the mobility access that was needed. So, but to utilize the term handicap in the sense of, you know, I have a handicap or you have a handicap, that you're not going to hear that. And it's really, that's like impairment to me. Handicap is like impairment to me. So I would just say, like, I mean, simple terms, if you think about it just clearly, like you can say, like I said, he happens to utilize a wheelchair. You know, he uses or she uses a wheelchair to get around. if you're dealing with like autism, you know, you can say that that individual might have some cognition. So you just keep it in generic terms so that you can, if you need to be aware of it, that you are, but you're not classifying it as something that's wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that is where I do like the differentiation on the words, is as long as you're not clear, as long as you're not implying that something's wrong.
Yeah.
Is differently abled similar to that too?
Yeah.
I read an article about, I was kind of like prepping, about not using differently abled any longer because it has a connotation of, well, while people are trying to use less offensive
words. Well,
just think
the word different.
Yeah, it's still like others, people.
So, yeah.
But you know. I was told.
Oh, we're the same, but we're different.
Right. I mean, you know, so. And I was told in college that, like, I was corrected by someone that I should use the word differently abled. So I was like, oh, okay, so, I've been using this word. And now I'm learning that, like, oh, actually, I shouldn't use this.
Probably shouldn't do that. Well, so, you know, but that also, I mean, as long as you're kind of like learning and being acceptable, it's like, but you have to remember, like, if you all of a sudden, you know, we were talking about if all of a sudden you're thrown on an alien planet, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're somewhere like totally, and they don't look anything like human beings, and they speak like a little kind of language that you can kind of understand or whatever. So you're standing around, and the first thing you're probably going to do is you're going to look for someone that's more like you.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're looking for something you can relate to, something you can, because you're all of a sudden out in no man's land. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden it's like, okay, I've got all these aliens. I'm sure they're just fine. But my level of, I'm not so sure about this situation just went up a notch. And so then you can slowly adapt. But your initial, that gut reaction is more inclined to be, oh, I'm looking for, so even though with people that have disabilities that they love being connected in the real world, some of them might have more difficulty in doing that than others, but they also are always going to want to have their group and their time. They go to a convention, they go to a support group, they go to they read information, they come to the Nashville Public Library and get the right resources that can help them. So they are still going to want to connect with something that's very close to home.
Yeah.
So it's not that you need to feel differentiated from other people, but I think we all do that. If you have a preference for, you know, going out to eat versus being at home, you're going to gravitate toward other people that enjoy going out to eat versus those that want to do a home-cooked meal. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just normal, I guess.
He's got that normal world.
Everything.
We got to work on that.
Everything is normal.
Oh my gosh. It's just normal.
Everybody's normal.
But, you know, like, I love this. Whenever I found out, I can still remember, I was, whenever I went late deafened, I woke up in the middle of the night, had to go to the bathroom, didn't have the hearing aids on. I'm going back to go to the bathroom, and I remember I flushed the toilet, and I'm washing my hands, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I don't hear the water spinning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, darn it, because I'm really kind of good at taking care of plumbing, and I'm going to have to figure out and get that fixed. Okay. So I turn around, and I look at the toilet, and the water was spinning. But I didn't hear it at all.
Wow.
And so I went to my audiologist the next day. I didn't call her. I drove over. I have a cart phone that I could use, but I drove over and I said, yeah, I need to say hi. I said, I think my hearing just went down the toilet.
That's amazing.
She was like, what?
Amazing.
You know, so,
yeah.
That's incredible joke writing right there.
Yeah, that's really good. You should. I think you have a higher calling for being.
Do you go from disabled to enabled, or should we not think about it like that?
I actually am a firm believer in the empowerment workshops that I do, and that's for all disabilities, that the going from disabled to enabled, because if you go through a disability and you all of a sudden find out, if you're a parent and you find out your child has something that's different or something happens later in life to you, you're going to go through the grieving process. You're going to go through those five steps of the grieving process. And in the process of doing that, that's okay. That's part of how you find your way and adapt, because it's something different. It's that operative word, change, that mm-hmm. a lot of people are not comfortable with. And you have to give yourself the freedom to feel the different emotions, to be mm-hmm. to go through the sadness, to go through the anger, to go through the denial, to go through everything that you have to go through to get there. Some people go through some of it, others go through all of it. Mm-hmm. But then you can come out on the other side and say, okay, now how do I look at the rest of this? Mm-hmm. Am I looking at if a challenge is presented to me, is this a wonderful opportunity, or am I looking at it like, oh my gosh, how am I going to deal with this? So if you practice on changing the words that you use, gets back to that word thing, that if you practice on changing the words, like we've been joking even here, someone was saying that, oh, I have to go to work. And I'm like, no, you get to go to work.
Yeah.
You get to, and not that, get rid of that half, get rid of that, just changing the words can make such a difference.
Yeah,
it's cool to think about that it's like an ever-evolving thing with, like, even within the disability community, I think it's just evolving. So the words mm-hmm. are going to be different from mm-hmm. the 50s to, like, now, to, like, 20 years from now. And, like, people in, like, 50 years are going to look back on our time and be like, oh, my God, can you believe they were even saying that?
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Well, technology is also going to change a lot of – I mean, you have – they have equipment now, so someone who's paralyzed can actually stand and walk. They have all these different things that are coming out. They've got wheelchairs that can go down on the beach.
Yeah.
They've got – I mean, they're coming out with just – huge, huge, huge things.
What's the coolest technology that you've seen in
My gosh, where would I start? Are you talking about are you talking about disability?
Disability.
So with disabilities, I think that one of the most amazing, I think, is seeing the paraplegic that can get into a bodysuit and be able to walk.
Yeah.
I think that's just mind-boggling to me, and the work that it takes, and all of the moving pieces that have to come together. But there's also, even with vision, they've come out with some amazing technology with that. That's just like, so you have people that you wouldn't have thought would ever have the opportunity to see that are all of a sudden going to be able to now.
Yeah.
And even the cochlear implant. The cochlear implant, even though it's been around for a while, they're modifying it. So to be able to go from not being able to hear anything and being totally deaf to be able to, if it works, and it doesn't work for everyone, but if it works, the cochlear implant. But and then even with what they're doing with various apps now, so you've got better opportunities for individuals that if they can't see, and being able to have auditory streaming, different things that's allowing them to have access and be mainstreamed in the world now is just, there's just, the list just goes on and on and on.
It's fascinating. How does the cochlear implant work?
The cochlear implant, it's actually, you have the external part and the internal part. The internal part is surgically implanted, and we actually have a sample one at the in our equal access office up on the third floor of the main public library. So you need to tell everybody to come and check it out.
Yeah.
But the cochlear implant has an electrode. It's a very thin, very, very, very thin piece. And it's got various electrodes that get activated when it goes into the cochlea. But it's surgically implanted in the cochlea, and the cochlea is very, very, very tiny. Mm-hmm. I mean, very tiny. So it gets embedded in there, and it's got the low, medium, and high sounds. So when they go into the cochlea, it starts high, goes medium, then it goes low. It's like a keyboard in your ear, okay? So then there's a magnet, and the magnet is on the internal part. The external part has another magnet so that when those two magnets connect, it activates the cochlear implant. And then on the external part, you have the processor and your battery power that you need. So you charge the battery at night, and then you put it on during the day. So, and the cochlear implant, what they try to do, they're trying to preserve hair cells, because in the cochlea, there's like 20 to 40,000 hair cells, okay? And they're your keyboard. So you can hold your fingers up on both hands, and if you hold all those fingers up and they're dancing and wiggling back and forth, but the fingers are straight up, that's your keyboard. So the sound comes into the cochlea, and then when it goes in, the strings play and or the hair cells play, and it goes through and it identifies that, and then it sends all of that to the auditory nerve. And the auditory nerve is what actually starts to process sound. So it's pulling from your memory and different parts of the brain. I mean, it's not just one pocket. There are different parts of the brain that light up whenever you are listening. So those hair cells, if you are listening to loud music, if you are streaming and doing things too loud and all of that, those hair cells will start to curve. So you can take your fingers and start to bend them. As those hair cells start to bend, then they no longer process sound properly. And there, at this stage, there is no way to rectify that. And then there are people that they might hear okay, but they get tinnitus or tinnitus. And that ringing in the ear, that's becoming very common. And especially in Music City, Nashville, it's becoming, and the average age for tinnitus now is about 21, 22, 21. So, yeah, it's really, it's not good. But the tinnitus, I have it all the time. So it's like jet engines in my ears. So I never really have silence. I haven't had silence probably since middle school. So,
But you're not desensitized. Are you like desensitized to the sound, or can you still hear it?
Yeah, like sometimes it gets overwhelmed, and you can't turn it off because it's internal, you know. But there are actually tinnitus support groups because there are people that are really dealing with that, and it can be very debilitating, very, very debilitating.
Yeah. I studied music at Belmont, and that was another thing that in like my audio engineering class, that was something that we had like a whole course on was tinnitus. Like, because if you're, I was going to do, like, engineering for, like, a hot second. Yeah. And if you're doing engineering, like, especially, like, with live music, like, they were, like, you really have to, like, protect your ears because you are, like, the music is projecting at, like, a certain decibel level. And, like, the amount of, like, if you're too close to it over time, like, it starts to, like, wear. And it's, like, I get like little ringing, like very rarely, but I've been in so many spaces with like where the speaker's like right there, or the speaker's like really bad. And so it's like, and I didn't bring headphones or I didn't prepare. So now, like when I go to these like improv jams a lot every week, and usually the monitors are like not great and the drummer is really loud. So I try to remember my plugs because like there was a, I think last year I was at one of the jams and that I was like the drummer was like smacking and I was literally standing there like, oh God, this hurts so bad, but I don't want to like be weird. And I didn't bring anything. I don't want to plug my ears in front of everyone. But sometimes I'm literally like, I have to plug my ears.
This is one thing that I will say, and I cannot emphasize enough that, you know, like my Marine would always say, he would talk to everybody because he does artillery and all of that, that he would say that, you know, you don't want to end up like my mom. And I would always laugh and I would say, well, I don't think any Marine wants to. I said, you might want to clarify that just a little bit. And what he's referring to is the hearing loss. So at any rate, but if you ever have discomfort of sound, please immediately protect your ears, get out of the room, do what you got to do, because you, if you have tinnitus periodically and the minute you feel that pain, that means you've already done damage.
Yeah.
And it's over time. The problem is by the time those hair cells start to do this, it can take years. So by the time you have full onset of tinnitus or hearing loss, it's way too late to do anything about it. That's part of what, like with equal access, like what we're wanting, especially here at the Nashville Public Library, is we're really excited about making sure we're expanding on everything, that we are doing all kinds of outreach. And that also includes prevention. So we are wanting to do the outreach and talking about Like you were saying, with how do you communicate with someone that has a disability? Mm-hmm. And that means just general open communication, which is what we want. And how do you, and I think I just knocked off one of my, it was weird. It just sounds weird. How do you prevent hearing loss? How do you, you know, so if you're a parent and you all of a sudden you know you're going to have a child, how do you go ahead and work around that so that you can be prepared? So if you find out that there is something that might be a little different, how you deal with that. And then working with our patrons here so mm-hmm. that they can also feel that comfort level and about advocacy, about doing yeah. that outreach. So, you know, like with the hearing loss and you having that experience, mm-hmm. that you would turn around and say, you know what, talk to your friends and say, hey, let's advocate for hearing loss prevention.
Yeah.
Let's do this together so we can still embrace the music, but let's do it yeah. a little wiser.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
It'd be cool to do like some disability justice stuff too, where we're like going to check on youth who are like incarcerated and they might be in there because of like a disability that they have.
Yeah, for sure.
And you don't know.
Yeah, and they don't know.
And that happens. I mean, that happens.
That happened like last year, I think, with mm-hmm. like a police officer.
Yeah.
I think he shot a boy who had autism and he didn't know that, like, whatever cues he was giving, he took it as threatening, which just speaks to, it's a whole other conversation, but I think that just across the board, there needs to be more training and preparation, especially for like law enforcement on how to like see the signs in people who may be disabled or cognitively disabled.
Yeah, like law enforcement, teachers, like
managers, sure. But especially if you hold a gun.
Because, if you're
like, my teacher's not going to shoot me, you know.
Yeah, but not just holding a gun, because a teacher, that's a lot of power.
For sure. No, you're
so
right.
So that's just as much power as a gun.
Definitely.
So I do think that, but it also gets kind of complex because it's like we're putting a lot of demand on these people that are giving back to our community. And we're saying, just know it all, okay? You'll be great. Just know it all. You'll be fine.
Can you speak six languages? And also understand that everyone is different completely and deal with everything in a completely different way, please.
That's it, exactly.
And protect me.
And protect me in the process. Oh, please. I mean, I'm just not asking for much now.
Yeah. It's cool. I'm not in support of police, nor am I in I don't know. I don't know my views on this podcast.
You can be in support of police and also be critical of, like, there's a, you know, you can have an either or.
Yeah. But I think that we also have to understand is that's part of where the social media really kind of like discourages me, is because it's like, okay, so the extreme gets posted.
Yeah.
So you had the situation that went wrong. It's always going to happen. You will not have everything be 100% okay. That's not the real – we are not perfect human beings. Therefore, we can't have. So and then to make that judgment and then to turn around and say, I mean, you want to think about the salary of these individuals.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about police
teachers
and all of these people that are giving back to our communities, you know, that we need to have a realistic perspective on that.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that we're doing our part. So if I have a child that I know has a situation, then all right, we need to do our part so that the child doesn't get in that situation to begin with. Now, again, you are always going to have the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
And what I don't want to see is people getting into and going to that extreme and saying, well, that's applicable across the board. And it's not. You know, it's
that's
not.
True.
It can happen and it does happen. But I think that I think more people, ironically enough, are wanting to be heard today than ever before.
Yeah.
And that's where the mental issue comes into play. And it doesn't mm-hmm. matter if you have a disability or not. That more people are wanting to be heard. And they're wanting to be heard because social media does not really let you be heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's just a lot of comparison on there, too, and it just robs you of, like,
individuality.
Individuality.
It robs you of individuality. It robs you of open conversations. It robs you of the opportunity to learn. And it's a very controlled environment. If you look at, they've had some documentaries that have come out recently that are really showing the complexity behind, I mean, they're using their algorithms to turn around and say what they want you to become.
Yes.
Not just what they want you to look at, but what they want you to become. They're changing who you are as a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a very serious situation.
Yeah, when you do a social media detox, you realize, like, the effect that it's having on you. Like, it's profound. It's insane.
I did another one this week. I deleted my apps.
It's wild.
On Sunday.
It is.
Whoa, yes.
It's completely wild.
Awesome. I do it, like, every, because I use social media primarily for, like, music stuff, but I feel like whenever I feel like I'm having a mental health issue, which is often, I usually am like, I need to get off and I need to recenter. And it's weird waking up in the morning and like instantly reaching for my phone. Oh, wait, there's nothing. Let me put it back down. Okay, now I'm here with my thoughts. Oh, no. But like, but it gives me an opportunity to reflect on, okay, what was the thing that happened yesterday that caused me to feel whatever? How do I move forward? How do I communicate what I'm feeling? And then when I feel a little bit ready, I'll get back on. And like, or if I have like a show or if I have a thing to release, I'll get back on. But it's literally every time I get off, it's like readjusting to not being on it and then realizing how much freer I feel and how much more in my body I feel, like how much more like mentally
it's like the
stable.
fish story of like the two fish that were just swimming, and then a fish passes them by, and the fish passing by goes, hey, how's the water today? And they're like, great. And then they keep on swimming, and then one fish turns to the other and is like, what is water? And it's like, you don't really realize that how it is affecting you until you are like
outside of it.
And you're like, oh my God, it was completely destroying my mood for like the whole first part of the day. And I didn't even realize that. I was just breathing it.
Well, do you know that like they were also saying that any place where you have like in cities where you have green, where you have grass, where you have trees, that on the average, crime goes down and mental imbalance can go down because we need nature. And and even in small quantities, it doesn't have to be big, but in small quantities, we need nature. And all of these physical structures, so like if you know, you see buildings and you see all that, and it can be fabulous, it can be wonderful, it can be engaging, it can be exciting, but it's also on the average very busy.
Yeah.
It's very busy visually. And so that same feeling is like for an autism person. So they want the grass. Mm-hmm. They want the nature. They want the buildings and everything and the people and movement and faces. That can all be really, really, really complex, really hard to do.
One of the best experiences of my life was going to National School of the Arts because we had a lot of different types of disabilities happening at NSA. But it was never, like, there was never, like, a special class for anybody or something. Or, like, if you had, like, autism, then you have to go to this special class or something. Everybody was just with everybody. Mm-hmm. And then you could really feel, like, it felt really good to be in band with people that were just different types of people. And but we're all playing music together.
Yeah.
Or, like, we're all, like, drawing together. And that was, like, really awesome. And they, like, promoted a lot of stuff. This was, like, the early stages of NSA when, like, the principal was, like, smoking weed and stuff. You know what
Principal
I mean?
Principal Bob,
R.I.P. And, like, all the teachers were, like, these wild hippie, like, you know, everybody was just... So it was, like, a free-for-all kind of situation. And that was, like, the best time in my life because we got the privileges of, like, being outside and also exploring our art outside together. And it was like you had like people from all different middle class, upper class, lower class, like different disabilities going on, like different languages going on. And like everybody was like coming together outside in the grass under trees and like playing music together. Mm-hmm. And that was like a unifying thing that happened. It was like the best experience of my life. And then my brother went to like Hume Fog and that was like such a stark contrast of like they were like their mental health was fast deteriorating
because there's no grass.
There's no grass.
Not one strand.
Not one strand of grass. And you had to like read like Schopenhauer and like all this like old philosophy, like mathematician stuff, and you're like writing all these essays, and yeah. it's like, wow, the mental load that you're putting on this like 17-year-old
yeah.
is insane. So like,
and the differences between you two as well are very yeah. stark.
And then when you get down to it, like NSA, people were like, oh, y'all went to NSA, like you didn't learn anything, like you didn't know, you didn't have school. And people who went to Hume Fog are like honored in this like, you know, baccalaureate kind of, they're going to like Belmont and like they're going to Vanderbilt and they're going to all these like prestigious, and like we're the things that we're like honoring as a society, I feel like, are really bad because we're just like forcing people to like get this insane mental load. I feel like in your teenage years, you shouldn't be like
learning about what you're going to do philosophy. When you get older.
Yeah.
What are you going to do when you grow up? What are your long-term goals?
Well, you know, we were talking about that the other day, and we were saying, like, what are you going to do? What do you want to be whenever you grow up? And I'm like, who knows the answer to that? Now, some yeah. people do. Some people do. I mean, they are born, they know. I mean, yeah. and, but they can also change over time. But it's, I always wondered, we were talking about with education, we were talking about part of, I think, that the increase in mental issues is all tied back to everything you're talking about right now.
Yeah.
So you have businesses that are actually, you got very few select businesses that have the power in America,
mm-hmm.
and they're infiltrating everything. So they're infiltrating our education, they're infiltrating our politics, they're infiltrating, and they're making sure it goes in a way that's going to work toward profitability. So that's just a fact. But by the same token, it's really interesting because you can see, like with education, I always wanted to, we would talk about with education being more open. So rather than being specific subject related, because you're going from English to math to whatever, you know, you just embrace it all. So like, think about whenever yeah. you're like, I remember whenever we were working with the kids in first grade, and then they had to learn to count to 10. And so we finally just did it in front of the classroom, and we asked them and said, do you know why you need to learn to count to 10? And every single one of them was like, no, and
yeah.
why do I, and is this relevant?
Yeah.
So then we tied it to something that would be beneficial. So like you could have 10 animals, you could have, and we put the stuffed animals up, and we did something that they could relate to, but they had to be able to tie in. They had to find a way to connect with that. But let's say you did something like, we're going to build a house, and you need instructions, which means you need to read, you need to know how to read, you need to know how to measure, you need to know how to communicate, you need to know how to connect with other people and different personalities. So you're not just learning the fundamentals of what we call education, but you're also learning the engagement of other people.
Yeah. The social emotional aspect is missing.
Social emotional aspect is definitely.
It's all yeah. just like math, yep. science, and like, this is the real world. And this, hey, here's what happens in the real world, kid. And then you're not teaching them like love, kindness, compassion, patience, understanding
yeah.
at like a early young age. And I've been noticing this with like this 6-year-old that I've been hanging out with.
Mm-hmm.
School is not teaching him patience. He's very impatient. Mm. And so we have to like work on patience, and he likes it. He likes patience.
Yeah.
And they're not like...
Most kids like patience. If you start with it, they will eat it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just really interesting. The education system, I feel like, needs a re-education of yeah. itself.
And it adds to this overall conversation about people wanting to be seen and heard, right? And like, and the lack of being able to just see people, just hear people. It's we're so mechanical in our way of life, I feel like. It's just the way that we've been taught to, oh, you go to school, then you go to college, then you get a job, then you get married, and you have kids, and you own a home. And it's like all of the things that we're being taught at a young age have nothing to do with community. And so it's like, no yeah. wonder we're all falling for the trap of social media that tells us all of these different ideas and things. And we zone in on that because we're all depressed and we're all anxious and we don't know how to.
We've lost our village.
Yeah.
We no longer have a village, and we haven't for years and years and years. So
yeah.
it's like, it used to be you lived in the same neighborhood. You grew up, and then you know, I mean, so, and whenever you went outside to play, you had all those people that were watching over for you. So if you went down the street or whatever you were doing, that you had a whole connection of family that knew where you were and what was going on. So you had the village. You had all the different ages. You had the young and the elder
That's so
and everything
important.
In between. And then we slowly, in this feat for profitability and, you know, and success as defined by profitability for the majority of Americans. So in that strive to obtain that, we stepped away and we, in essence, just broke down the village.
Yeah.
And so now where do you get that? How do you get that? What do you do? Because it was like we always wanted to, like, you know, even with my children, we moved around and did different things and then wanted to try and create an essence of community and wanted to go ahead and keep them engaged where they were outdoors and not on the computer and not on the, you know, finding different ways that had them exploring the world. And so whenever you said, like, you drop the apps from the phone, amen, and you're like, so you're like, okay, I am looking at this in a different way, that you all of a sudden, what you really want to do is go outside and take a young child's perspective when they're walking through the woods for the first time, or they're walking through, look through their eyes and see how incredibly beautiful everything is out there.
Yeah.
And that child is just embracing everything and doing what they can. And even if they have a disability, guaranteed,
yep.
they are embracing everything. They don't know. They're going to be taught over time that there are things that, quote unquote, are perceived as wrong, or what direction they're supposed to go, or why they all of a sudden are viewed as a failure for other people, which is unfortunate. But if you look through a child's eyes, then you're going to see the essence of everything that we can do, and we could all be practicing that. Now, that we need an app for.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you feel like even dealing with disability, there is like a sense of gratitude for that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, and it really is. It's all in perspective.
It truly is all in perspective. Like, how do you personally feel about like being hard of hearing and then transitioning into being deaf, right?
Yes.
Are there things that you think back on and you're like, yeah, this was a struggle, this was hard for me, but like actually like I'm kind of like, how do you feel about the gratitude in having a disability?
In today's world, my gratitude is all that I've learned and to, you know, my brother and I, the relationship that we have is just so incredible. And I look at all the obstacles we overcame, and I look at where both of us are today just as people. And I'm eternally grateful, because I think that life without challenges is, you start to take it for granted. And we don't take it for granted. And we're very grateful for all the little things, or like even being here, or what we're trying to do up with, you know, in equal access and making a difference for everybody else, that I feel empowered and grateful and excited and motivated. And so I'm really, really, really grateful for that, very grateful for that. And I hope that we can continue to expand that and, you know, raise that awareness for other people, and especially for... Now, when it comes to mental, the cognitive, or dealing with depression and the anxiety, then I would think that's a much more challenging situation. So it depends upon the person and what they're dealing with and the outlook and all of that. But when it comes to that, and I'm watching that grow, it's very, very, very discouraging for me to see what they have to contend with and what they have to deal with, because it can actually freeze up the world. And then trying to adapt, that I think that you have more people in that category that will actually work so hard to adapt that they'll put on a front that's nothing like what it really is.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that it remains very important, and there still is that window of opportunity, because it gets back to, like, whenever I was talking about the workshop that we do with empowerment, that, you know, finding those windows where we're ensuring that we can find the right way and communicate to let everyone, every single person, feel that empowerment. Yeah. And that there's a light at the end of that tunnel.
Yeah. Could you also, because we haven't talked about equal access in the library services for deaf and hard of hearing. Do you want to, like, kind of expound on more about what that department does and everything? Well, I guess maybe it's so much, but that's a loaded question. But, like, some of the things that come to mind that are the most, like, exciting for you to, like, connecting people with resources here at the library who might
Absolutely.
Need them?
Absolutely. I think that, number one, equal access, it really started with library services for the deaf and hard of hearing. Sandy Cohen started that about 45 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Sandy Cohen.
Shout out to Sandy.
This
Happy retirement.
We'll dedicate it to Sandy Cohen.
dedicated yeah. to Sandy. Absolutely. I mean, oh, my
Why
gosh.
Not?
I mean, she is amazing. So she started this about 45 years ago, and she's hearing. So very fabulous signer, and just had a passion for helping the deaf and the hard of hearing. So she started collecting 45 years ago, being female in that working world, and they said, hey, we want to do something different here at the library. What do we want to do? And she said, I want to go after the deaf and the hard of hearing and eventually the deafblind. So she started asking for materials from around the country, anybody that can send a book or do whatever. And people did. Then it gravitated to VHS tapes, then it gravitated to DVDs, then it gravitated to whatever. So we have the largest collection of deaf and hard of hearing and deafblind resources, not just blind is different, but deafblind, in the country. And so my hat goes off again. Sandy, I mean, made all that possible. Then in 2016, they brought the Talking Library over. Now, the Talking Library has been around a long time, and I think they're going to be celebrating 50 years come 2025. So be on the lookout.
Yeah.
There's opportunities. So the Talking Library moved to Nashville, the main library, in 2016. And so that offers the streaming for the individuals that can't read, regardless of what that disability might be. It could be because they can't stay focused. It could be low vision. It could be blind. So all of those different things. And so now what we're looking at is Sandy just retired. So she retired this year. And then I was grateful enough to find out about the opening for the position and interviewed along with a bunch of others, and extremely grateful that the library chose me to be the new library services for the deaf and hard of hearing, and working in conjunction with Talking Library and expanding on equal access. So what we're doing now is we have from the Talking Library and the library services for the deaf and hard of hearing, there's a little bit of an overlap that we have a Braille printer that's up there on the third floor. We have the low vision so that if you want to have the magnifying, that you can go ahead and put the book on the underside. And then there's different, you can choose all different kinds of options so that you can read at the level it can be increased or decreased. We have all of the different hearing loss the different resources that we have, so like alarms, like I told you about the cochlear implant, all those different things. So you can come and you can actually see what all of that is and what it looks like and if you're interested in something. We offer EARS, which is the emergency program for weather alert radios. That is free for the individuals throughout the state. Or actually, I'm sorry, I take that back. That's 13 counties. It's offered in 13 counties. And it's free for people in need. And the weather alert radio has an alarm activation so that it will alert, and then it will also display if it's a tornado or a storm or whatever it might be that's coming through. Hurricane, depending on, which we don't get here, but, you know. And then we also have brochures and other resources, so anybody that's looking for information, that they can have that. Now, what we're doing is, we're taking all of this a step further, and we are expanding on equal access outreach in general. So we're talking with different patrons that come through the library. We're talking with volunteers. We're talking about doing that additional outreach. we want to have, like you guys are doing with these podcasts, that, you know, doing more outreach through our newsletter. We have the LSDHH newsletter that goes out, different things like that. So we are doing all that we can to do that outreach. Now, the other thing is, back on LSDHH side, is the focus has really been more on the deaf. And so we are doing more outreach for the hard of hearing, for the tinnitus, and we're also doing a lot more with mental. We want to really place a primary focus on mental wellness, regardless of if it's talking library, LSDHH, you know, anything else in between, that we are doing the focus on that. So that means getting more resources with additional books and collections that we have, talking to our patrons and identifying anything that we do not have so that we can add that to whatever might be beneficial to them. We're digitizing a lot of information so that it'll be more accessible, and finding other ways, because a lot of things are going with streaming and everything else like we're doing here. So I could keep going, but that's kind of it
in a nutshell. Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool stuff up there.
It really is amazing. And it's like, and every time that we, of course, we're the best department, you know, in the main library, right? You know that, right?
Historically.
Won't argue.
But seriously, what we are finding is, it's so funny because I'll come downstairs and we'll be on the first floor, because our first floor is really the window of opportunity for the main library. So that, well, I'll see people coming in, and you can typically identify the person that might be doing their first tour of Nashville Public Library. And so go up and talk to them, ask them why they're here, and then we'll talk about where they can go, what they can do, and talk about the civil rights, and talk about women's rights, and talk about the children's department, and the teen center, and the technological corner that's up there with Nick that's just beyond amazing, the archives, the adult section, everything in between. And then we'll tell them to stop by the library services for the deaf and hard of hearing and the talking library and equal access. And every single time, whenever they come up and they go up to our area and we give them the tour and they're walking through, and they are just truly amazed. I mean, they are just blown away. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've done that tour like 5 times, and it's like mind-blowing every single time.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It doesn't get tiring.
No, yeah. It's really cool.
It's like, it doesn't get tiring at all.
You touch slightly on like these historical things that spark imagination. Like when I was doing the tour, it was different every time. And then seeing like the old machines, I'm like thinking back to like the 1800s and how people were like dealing with things back then. And it's just like, so it's nice. You're like briefly touching on these things, and you're like, hey, check this out. And then you're like, your imagination is just going like in all these different directions as you're like going through it. So it's like, it's nice. It's really cool.
Yeah.
For history nerds, I highly recommend it. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's super cool.
You know, that is true, because we do have that, and we're expanding that. We're also going to have like, on the shelving where we have all, everything that's displayed, that some of the history is, we're going to go ahead and have that highlighted so that it'll be, so you can go ahead and read a little bit about it. And then we're hoping to go ahead and have like where you can have the information to where you can go to like a URL and you can go ahead and you can read more about it. So we also have the Ask Sandy, which is the really big deal, that website, which is like the highlight of everything that is doing all kinds of outreach, and that is just taking it and blowing it out of the water. So the one thing I did want to say with LSDHH is, a lot of people don't realize, is we have services in Davidson County, and then we also service the state of Tennessee.
Oh.
So in Davidson County, you can go to any one of the branches. We can send the material to you, or if you can't, we can mail it to you. Then we have the entire state. And for anyone that's outside of Davidson County, we can go ahead and they can get a different patron card. And they can request materials, and we send that free of charge out to them. They get to hold it for 3 weeks, and then they get to send it back. So we have the label for printing to go ahead and send it back to us all through UPS.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
From Sandy to Cynthia, we're here.
Hey! Yes. Alliteration.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Before we wrap up, I just want to ask one more question. Cynthia, so from your perspective, or any resources that you've learned, or anything that comes to mind, What are some little nuggets you want to leave us with specifically to help empower people who may be experiencing disabilities or people who are around loved ones who have disabilities, ways that they can advocate for their mental health or for each other's mental health?
I definitely would recommend that whenever you're around other people that you know are dealing with any disability, that you just remember to treat them like a normal human being. And if it's a parent that has a child, let that parent feel empowered by just walking in, walking through the door, and just acting normal. I'm using the word normal now.
Nice.
But just acting as if, you know, like just go with the flow. And that is probably one of the most empowering things that you can do, because it's showing them that everything can be okay. And if someone is struggling with something, then you can turn around and say, you know what, is there anything I can do? You know, whatever it might be. And a lot of times it's really more just about listening. It's about listening, and it's about effective communication, maybe shaving the beard. And so
nice trim. You don't have to fully blade to face. Nice trim.
But anyway, but it really is. It's about just letting people feel that they're connected, that you care. And you do that a lot of times through not even saying anything, just by being present. Mm-hmm. So, and just remember that everybody is different.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about the disability or not. So, and I want to thank you guys so much for the opportunity to be here today. And you guys are amazing. And you guys are doing it. You're knocking it out of the ballpark.
You.
And you're doing the empowering thing through this podcast. Oh, I am just so excited to see what lies ahead.
Oh, well, thank you for coming on and talking with us too, and helping the podcast be better, because we really wouldn't be able to make it what it is without the people who have like donated time to talk about like what they love and help our patrons. Hopefully.
Yeah, you're an incredible conversationalist.
Absolutely.
And just like very good person to
so
talk to.
So fun
absolutely.
To talk to. Yeah.
I've oh
been
my gosh,
like.
Thank you.
But hey, yeah. We got to say thanks to these guys back here, too.
Yeah, thank you. Travis and Chris and Forrest and Hannah and all of production services, because, like, honestly, we wouldn't be able to do this without them either. Thank you so much, Cynthia, for coming on. Thank you guys for listening. And remember,
your mind matters.
Cute.
This concludes season one of the Your Mind Matters podcast. We hope you join us next season for even more discussions on mental health and wellness. We want to thank our MPL production services staff, the core administration team, and all of our guests for making this season possible. Special thanks to Linda Harrison of the Education and Literacy Department and Interim Director Terry Luke for supporting this podcast. You can now listen to the Your Mind Matters podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Pocket Casts, or on our website at library.nashville.org/podcast. For all things library, visit library.nashville.org or follow us at @NPL on all major social media platforms. Lastly, thank you for listening, and remember, your mind matters.